The following episode was recorded in front of a live streaming audience on Saturday, October the 12th, 2024.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 69, The Phony Pacifists. Hello and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven, and 1,000 miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore. Ed, how you doing?
Sup. I'm doing pretty good.
So this is for those of you who may be new to the show, you don't know that right now, this very moment, we are officially entering into our the banter segment of the show. We have it in our show notes, the banter segment.
Yes.
Ed, I understand you have some a topic for bantery discussion.
Yeah. I thought that we would take a moment and talk a little bit about what TV we're watching.
Okay.
My TV for the past month and a half has been primarily the same on weekends. I'm a huge college football fan. And anyone that follows college football knows that during the season, there is no lack of places that you can watch college football.
Yeah.
My wife and I were talking last night, and I roughly calculated, she and I found about 125 broadcasted games, just today that there's going to be from starting about 9 o'clock until about 10 or 11 tonight. So about 12 hours, which sounds like a lot. But then when you consider that there are approximately 650 to 700 colleges that play football in the U.S.
Yeah.
You can consider some of those will be taking any given week off because everybody has a gap somewhere in their schedule. But still, if we say 700, there are two teams per game, of course. So that's roughly 350 games. So we'll just round that up to saying 300 games played. Yeah. Every weekend from, what would it be? From the August, from maybe the last week of August, but definitely the first week of September till the middle of December. 300 games played every weekend.
That's a lot of football.
And that doesn't count potentially a handful that would be on Sunday, but that doesn't happen too much because that's when the NFL plays. But you will get a handful anywhere from Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday leading up to this week. There were games all 5 days of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. There were college games that were broadcast either on, you know, ESPN or Fox or whatever. So, no lack of college football to watch. Not only that, but within, probably a 20-minute drive, we are in range of three colleges here that play football. And then given about an hour-ish, we can be at Virginia Tech, which is very high-level football.
Yeah.
So with for us, within about a three-mile or a three-hour driving range one way, if we wanted to, we could hit about 10 different colleges or universities that play football. So any given weekend, conceivably, we could find a home football game to attend live if we wanted to. And I bring that up because as I was looking to see how many colleges there were, I am convinced that anyone in the U.S. can drive 3 hours or less and find a college football game to watch live if they want to. There are that many places that play. I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, we got KU 10 minutes away. We got K-State, that's probably about an hour to an hour and a half away. And then my daughter is now going to Pitt State, and they're 3 hours away. So that's at least three within a three-hour
Yeah, it's range. Just, you know, you don't, all you normally hear about are like the big, big schools. That would be what they call now the FBS. And there's about 130 schools there. So, I mean, that's plenty to talk about. But You also have FCS. You have a Division II, a Division III. You had NAIA, which the three colleges near us, that's what level they play at. And then you have junior college, smaller than NAIA. So all of those, there's all kinds of different dictates as to how you qualify. So, I mean, anybody interested, if they don't already know, you can look that up. But that's so, you know, you have six different divisions of football. You only hear about one primarily, unless something really, really cool happens. You might hear about somebody else, Sports Center, ESPN, the plays of the day or plays of the week, whatever they do, you know, maybe some big play or something. So, yeah, that's a lot of what, and fortunately, my wife happens to like watching college football as well. So it's not a tough sell to be able to sit there on a Saturday and watch, 10 to 12 hours of college football if we want to. So.
Yeah, I'm not I myself am not a sports guy. I don't watch any of it. But
I understand.
I went when I had a roommate 20 years ago that was a big KU fan, and so we were always watching basketball.
Okay.
But beyond that, just not a I don't do it anymore. It's just not, you know, I don't care for it. My wife doesn't care for it. None of the kids care for it. So it's just never.
Then there you go. Yeah. Moving on. Yeah.
Growing up, you know, I'm the middle child. My older brother likes sports. My younger brother likes sports. My dad likes sports. So it was always on in the house growing up. But
you didn't have
I just never got into it. Probably because I was the middle child. That's.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah.
Middle child syndrome or something? Okay. So outside of sports, what have you been watching lately?
Well, if I just need to watch something that I don't have to think about, I tend to rotate around a handful of sitcoms that I watch from beginning to end. And currently I'm in the middle or near the end of Modern Family.
Okay.
Otherwise, I think the only shows that I'm really watching, I think I mentioned before we started, there were three. There's actually four. They're all streaming shows, of course, but they're the ones that they're not Netflix shows, so they don't put up the entire season at once.
Okay.
So I'm in the middle of season four of Only Murders in the Building, which has been excellent this year. Agatha All Along on Disney Channel, which I'm really enjoying, even though, I mean, really the only character that I have any knowledge of from the comic books would be Agatha, but she was so different in the comics that her MCU version doesn't resemble what was in the it's just the name, that's pretty much it, and that she is loosely associated with Wanda Maximoff. On Hulu, I'm watching The Old Man with Jeff Bridges, which is really good. I will say with The Old Man, I think they're on season two. The very, very first episode is like, you watch that first episode and you're just like, oh my God, this is like the greatest show on television ever. And then every episode since hasn't quite been up to that standard.
Okay.
But you're just hoping. They're enjoyable. But there's a part of you that's like, maybe it'll get back up to that first episode standard. It's kind of like, have you ever watched Justified?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, the first episode of that show was based on, because the whole series is based on one short story from Elmore Leonard, I think it is. Is that the guy?
I think that's his name.
Yeah. So that first episode, that was that short story. And that's why the first episode is so good compared to everything that came. You know, it's a good show from front to back, but the first episode is probably the best of all of them.
I would have to agree with that.
And I know that The Old Man is based off of a series of books. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, but it's still pretty good. And then over on Peacock, I've been watching Fight Night, which is based on a true story about a back in the 70s in Atlanta when Muhammad Ali, you know, he wasn't boxing for a while because he refused to go to Vietnam.
Right.
And so to punish him, they took his title away and they wouldn't let him box anymore. And then eventually he was allowed to start boxing again. And this was like one of his first fights was in Atlanta against Jerry Quarry. I think that was the guy's name. And Muhammad Ali won, of course. But After the fight, there was a big party that was being held for a bunch of criminals. They referred to them as the Black Mafia, these like black mafia bosses from around the country came to Atlanta to watch the fight. And then they had this party and then somebody robbed them. And so this is about that side of it where somebody robs these. And it's all, you know, it says right before each episode that while this is based on a true story, it, you know, many of the much of the story has been fictionalized for entertainment right. purposes. And it's actually supposed to be, they reference a podcast, a true crime podcast, also called Fight Night, as the inspiration for the show. So once I watched the first episode, I went back and I listened to the podcast. And so the podcast has all of the actual correct information. And yeah, other than the fact that there were some criminals at a party after an Ali fight and they got robbed and a bunch of the names are the same. Otherwise, yeah, it's way fictionalized, but it's so good. It's got Don Cheadle in it. It's got Samuel Jackson in it.
That is the show where the mobsters are played by a lot of A-level actors. Yeah, yeah. I've seen the ads.
It's got Terrence Howard. It's got Kevin Whitaker. Hart, who's really good in it. I look forward to it each and every week. And I know that the new episode went up this week and I haven't watched it yet. And they're about 45 minutes to an hour long, which is really cool. Okay. Don't let the kids watch it. Lots of violence, lots of cussing, nudity. Yeah. I don't think I've heard the N-word used as much as I have just watching this show. It's so good. Samuel Jackson is so good in it. They're just all, and I love Don Cheadle. Don Cheadle is like one of my favorite actors and he's really good in this. And the guy that he plays is a real guy and same with Kevin Hart and Samuel Jackson. But it's really good. It's a lot of fun. It's set in the 70s, so you got all this great music and this great fashion and
sure.
And it's a lot of fun. And I know I'll be watching that this weekend. I'll put it this way. I am all caught up on Only Murders in the Building. That episode came out this week. Had I started the newest episode of Agatha All Along, if I had started that earlier this morning, I'd be caught up there. And I am caught up on Fight Night. The Old Man, I think I'm two episodes behind.
So. Okay.
But I love Jeff Bridges. And trying to think who the other old guy is in it. The guy that was in Third Rock from the Sun.
Lithgow.
John Lithgow. He's really good in it, too. Yeah. Yeah. Good show. And I am going to have to spend most of the episode now leaning back because I have, as you can see.
You have Cat.
This is my day now. This is laying on my arms. So I'm trying to type, move my mouse around and junk like that all day long. And she doesn't care. She doesn't care.
Nope.
She's just like, whatever. Yep. Now I got to get comfortable again. That's about it.
That's funny. Okay. All right. Me. So I think we have bantered enough. So let's carry on.
Let's get into this episode. Today we're looking at the Phony Pacifists, which is the first Superman story to appear in Superman number 9. Written by Jerry Siegel with art by Paul Cassidy. Superman number 9 has a cover date of March and April 1941. And according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, it has an on sale date of January 3rd, 1941. Here is what happened. Lois and Clark stumble upon a secret military depot. When Lois investigates, she is arrested for espionage. A group of real spies try to destroy the depot, but Superman intervenes. The spies kill themselves and destroy their submarine to avoid capture. Clark returns to the depot and arranges for Lois to be released. As he is given more information, he spots more spies attempting to blow up the depot. Again, he stops them as Superman, but he lets the leader, Derwing, escape. Derwing is the leader of the Committee Against Militarism. The group's goal is to prevent the U.S. from rearming for Pacific. I said that wrong. The group's goal is to prevent the U.S. from rearming for pacifist. Pacifistic. That's a stupid word. Pacifistic reasons. But it secretly is in the hands of a foreign power. Superman records damaging statements from Derwing, exposing the spy to Senator Glassworthy and breaking up the ring. Ed, what'd you think of this one?
This had more going on than I remember most of the stories having.
Yeah.
There were several turns. There was a dude that was working against like three different entities, and it was almost confusing trying to keep up with who is with and what they're doing and what are they a good guy or a bad guy. You know, the one constant was Superman, and I think the only reason that we could tell that he was who he was because of that colorful outfit he wears. Yep, otherwise, it's like, no. Well, and Lois, she was out of it most of the time, so it was easy to keep track of her. But yeah, it was just very not necessarily all over the place, but there were a lot of subplots that just kept dropping. They all got tied up by the end of the story, I thought, pretty well. But, it was a very full story, for this length and this time, during the Golden Age, I thought.
Yeah. I think the most surprising aspect of the story is we learn on page one that it all happens as Lois and Clark are coming home from a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Lois and Clark were out on a date. Or they're just hanging out as friends. But she, you know, I can't remember if it's this issue, this story, or the story we'll talk about in the second issue. I don't remember if it's this story or the story we'll talk about in the next episode, but I know that there is one point where she gets all angry at him again for being a coward and she just can't be around him anymore. I think it's the next story.
Yeah, it's the next story.
That part shocked me more than anything. It's like, whoa, Lois and Clark are hanging out either as friends or I'm going to guess as friends. I think they just went to see a movie together. But and that's when, you know, they just happen to be driving by the waterfront and they're OK, there goes the cat. Now I can sit back up again. They happen to be driving by the waterfront and they see all this activity, this military activity. And Lois wants to check it out because, of course, she smells a story. And
yep.
So she makes up this, you know, I'm tired, yawn, I need to go to bed. And Clark's like, oh, yeah, me too, yawn. And, you know, they're both planning on coming back to see what's going on. And
he knows that she will, but she has no idea that he would.
Right. And there's this really great moment where he's following her. Superman's up on a building. He watches her come out of her building and get in her car. And he's like, ha ha, I knew she was going to do this. And so he's going to follow her. He leaps off the building. That panel is a great panel of him leaping off the building. Yes. His arms and legs are just splayed akimbo or however you call it. And
the way he is drawn there, it's like, you definitely see that he's leaping there.
Yes, he's falling gracefully. And but that third panel, I love the narration then or in that because it says, leaping atop the auto, the man of tomorrow's superb muscles enable him to perform this amazing feat without one betraying sound. So he's able to jump off the top of a building and land on a car, and his muscles allow him to do that somehow without making this bam impact when he lands on the car. He's just able to gently, like a leaf, land on the car. And I don't know how his muscles accomplish that other than the fact that he's flying.
Yeah.
But
I wondered what was going to happen because as soon as I saw that happening, I'm like, well, she's going to hear him land on the car. And then sure enough, the narrator tells us, nope, that she didn't hear.
Now, the third panel, though, where he is jumping on the car, it does look like we're missing a bit that maybe he fell, hit the ground and then jumped up onto the car because he appears to be jumping from behind the car on top of it rather than just landing atop of it from the sky,
but
still you'd hear that. You'd hear that sound, but he hangs out on the roof of the car and watches her go in. There's even a point where she's trying to climb a wall and she's having a hard time with it. And he thinks to himself that as a man, the gentlemanly thing to do would be to go over and help her.
Go help her.
But he doesn't want her to know that he's there just yet. So he lets her struggle. And then the best panel on this page is when he leaps over the wall. It looks like he's, I don't know, I, You can't see his hands above his head because of the word balloon. But the position of his body makes me think that he's snapping both fingers at the same time and that he should be going, ole! That's what it looks like he's doing.
Kicking his heels together.
Yeah, he's kicking his heels.
He's
just bought a car.
And he's kicking his heels together. Yeah, he's some kind of happy commercial where he's celebrating. And that's what it looks like there.
We do have a couple of instances in this story, and I keep forgetting to write them down, but we have a couple of instances where somebody ends their sentence with, hey, sneaking aboard the ship, hey. And if I run into him, I'll point him out. But Lois, as she's sneaking up to this, to all this military activity and whatnot, she sees across the bay, somebody is signaling, because it's nighttime, somebody's signaling with a flashlight. And so when she runs into, who is this? Major Lester and Sergeant Casey.
Right.
She tries to tell them, hey, I saw somebody using a flashlight to signal somebody. There's obviously some espionage going on. And they're just like, oh, yeah, I think you're the spy. Let's lock her up. And so they arrest her.
Well, because she's not supposed to be there to begin with. So, I mean, you know, somebody who is not supposed to be there to begin with trying to tell you that something nefarious is going on. It's like, and it's you. That's the nefarious.
Well, and that's how, you know, that it might be how a spy would try to get, you know, them to stop looking at them. It's like, I was following a spy. They're over there. You got to go get them. But
the old look over there kind of thing.
It's, yeah. And go ahead.
Something that the previous page, the very last panel where Superman is walking behind Lois, did you in your head see them walking up on their toes behind each other and hear some kind of music in the background as they were?
You know, I didn't.
Oh,
but the moment you pointed out, I can't help but not hear and see that now.
Yeah,
especially the greatest scene in the entire story that I just jumped right over happens in those three first panels of the following page, because he's following her, you know, he's creeping along behind her, and she senses that somebody is behind her. So she spins around to catch them. Superman sees that she's about to spin around, but since he's so super fast, he just spins around behind her.
Yep.
Very cartoonish. When she spins around to catch him, he moves with her and just stays behind her the whole time. And she's like, huh, I guess nobody is actually behind me. And he's thinking to himself, I guess there is something to this so-called women's intuition.
Yeah, that was a very playful set of panels there. Yeah. Very motion cartoony for what I would imagine at the time. That has to be a thing that they would have seen in cartoons in the 40s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can see that happening in like a Tom and Jerry or a Mighty Mouse.
Yeah.
You know, or a Looney Tunes. But not only is it silly and fun, it looks damn good. I mean, the panel where he is spinning around behind her, it just looks really good. Who did we say was Paul Cassidy? Yeah, that's why. He always does a pretty good job with Superman.
Yeah, like good motion, good perspective, frame of reference for them, good movement of the bodies in order to get those story elements.
Even the S on his chest in that second panel, so many times throughout these Golden Age stories, the S looks horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can tell that they just obviously just free-handed a quick X or a quick S. And then a lot of times when you see the red coloring on that S, it goes way outside the lines. Mm-hmm. It's just, it always looks pretty bad. But and that the triangle that the S is in is nice and wide going across his chest. It looks really good. But I really like those two panels.
Yeah, that was a fun little interlude in what is, you know, over and above a pretty serious story for the beginning of 1941, right? Yeah. So, you know, as we get into some more of the spy stuff, I've got a couple questions there. But so as you said, the Lois, she's on the docks here, and no one is supposed to be. The docks were closed off by the police, cordoned off. She sneaks in and they catch her and she tries to, but there was something going on over there to, you know, get their attention elsewise. And momentarily they're like, oh, really? And they didn't see anything because it was a light signal and the light has gone out by now. So they, in essence, they perp march her onto the ship. What's up, Doug?
Doug is in the house. Doug says, what's up, guys, for all you audio listeners. What's up, Doug? How you doing?
Hey, good to have you back, man.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
So they perp march her up and lock her in a cabin on a nearby boat.
I think it's a
boat. She's referencing a freighter over there is where the light came from, but I don't think they don't really tell us what this boat is. So it's some military or military use boat at the time.
Now, in the meantime, Doug says he's glad we're back to touch my heart. In the meantime, Superman, using his telescopic vision, sees the guy who had the flashlight. They refer to him as a deckhand. And he jumps off of that freighter into the ocean, and Superman dives in after him. Now, that one panel of the deckhand diving into the water, he is completely covered in shadow.
Right.
It's just nothing but a black silhouette. And that is, though he is referenced often throughout this sequence of events, the narration telling us what he's doing and how he's doing it, that's the only time we see him. And I find that really weird. It was a bit confusing to me because, I mean, not confusing, but it was a weird way to tell a story because Superman dives in after him and they tell us that he's swimming underwater and they tell us that he is closely pursuing the deckhand, who we don't see. Superman comes up out of the water as the deckhand climbs aboard a rocky thing coming out of the water, just a bit of land sticking out of the water. Again, we're told that this is happening. We even see the rock thing coming out of the water. Don't see the deckhand climbing onto it at all.
Yeah,
we just don't see him at all. And then that's when the submarine comes out of the water and immediately starts firing upon the freighter. And Superman has to intervene. We got this really nice shot of Superman leaping out of the water like a frickin' whale. Mm-hmm. And the shells are bouncing off of his chin. Ran out of vocal there, but the shells are bouncing off of his chest. I'm going to let you take over from here.
Okay. I noticed after he takes this shell to the chest, which is the 1941 akin to taking an arrow to the knee, by the way, this is, Superman took a shell to the chest. The next panel shows him moving in such a way that he is not flying.
Well, it's like a whale jumping out of the water and bending over backwards.
There is no way. No. He is flying because he's changing his trajectory.
He's flying.
Because he comes from, in essence, he's hopped out of the water in front of the submarine, it doesn't have to be in front of the submarine because the submarine is shooting a whatever millimeter gun from its deck. And so, of course, it can turn that 360 degrees. So Superman takes one off the chest and he ultimately leaps from out away and beside the submarine, arcs up and lands on the deck of the submarine.
It's like a whale.
Yeah, okay.
A whale swims so fast, comes up out of the water, bends its body.
you
and
your
the whale
your,
is so big that it doesn't clear the water like Superman is.
Willy the whale fascination there. I don't, you know, it's, yeah.
But he is, I mean, he's arcing over the top of that submarine backwards. Got his arms out, you know, like, he's flying.
Yes.
It'll be nice when we get to issue 10 and we can just go, yeah, he's flying. There's
just acknowledge. Yeah, he flew over here. He flew over. Yeah. It's like, no, he jumped and he came down without making a sound on top of a car. And he's hanging, which I do have an update. Hanging from a leg, you know, all this is like, yeah, it'll be fun to finally be able to put that behind us and take that one step at least, toward the Superman, of course, that we see nowadays, with all of his powers and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So,
yeah, it'll be nice not having to try to play devil's advocate and defend what he's trying
what
to
he's
do.
Doing. Yeah, it's like. Not that, you know, of course we have to, but for those that don't have the book and can't see what we're seeing, you know, some level of explanation is necessary. But here before too long, we'll just be able to say he's flying or he flew
On the next page, we get an A because there's a guy. So on the previous page, when Superman's flying over the top of the submarine, there's a guy standing out there with the gun. Superman lands on the submarine. The guy's like, fire! And they fire this. The Superman tries to twist the gun away, and it just explodes. And then the next page, Superman jumps up to the top of the turret where the guy is. But the guy jumps back into the submarine and closes the turret. Right. And that's when Superman says, bashful, eh? And then he stays on... This is a weird three panels because he says bashful, eh? And then I guess that's him standing there on top of the submarine.
I think so,
of running out on a fight, are you? And then suddenly in the third panel, the submarine is so far away that you can't even see it. And Superman is flying toward, I guess, chasing after it.
Yeah, he must have jumped off of the submarine in the same direction before the submarine went underwater. Because as we said, he can't fly. So that,
But the submarine blows up the freighter that the dude was on, that the deckhand was on.
He turned towards the shore before the Man of Tomorrow can reach shore. The torpedo strikes its destination. So
blows up that bit of land where the deckhand was waiting, just blows the deckhand out of the water, basically.
Yeah.
Just like, we can't let anybody stay alive that could testify against us. And so they blow him up. And and then Superman, he cracks open the submarine and it explodes.
Yeah. He rips the propeller off so that it can't go anywhere. And then as he's trying to break into it, it self-destructs in essence.
They kill themselves, so
I guess they know that it's Superman or something. I mean, I don't necessarily know. Given, well, I guess they have seen him take those shells off his chest and all that kind of stuff, so they know.
Yeah, at least the one dude that was up on deck saw him.
In this story or the next story, they just refer to him as a strong guy. Are we back?
I think so.
All right. Sorry, guys. We had a power suck or an internet suck there or something. Yeah.
Had one of them internet things.
So either way, Superman takes care of the submarine here. So that aspect, and this is the beginning of what I was saying, that there were so many subplots going on in the story. This submarine has basically been, a plot or subplot as we are moving on. But right now it's been the plot of the story since the beginning, pretty much. The harbor, something going on, signaling submarine, all of this stuff. So now the submarine is gone. So it can't be used anymore. And in a way, it kind of felt like, well, okay, that's the end of the story. You know, in the next page or so, they'll wrap it up or something. They just keep marching on here. Because now Clark goes back to wherever he left his clothes, and he dresses. And now he's going to try to track down what has happened to Lois, where she is. So he runs back into Major Lester and Sergeant Casey. Now, Sergeant Casey is a local police officer.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Major Lester is military.
Yeah.
As we're in this situation where the two are mixing.
Yeah. And they, Lois makes a comment at the beginning of the story when they first see all the activity out there. She says, Sergeant Casey is out there. He'll tell us what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know him. He knows them. But he tells them to beat feet, basically. And Clark, you know, he comes up to Sergeant Casey and this lieutenant, and he's like, he finds out that Lois has been arrested for espionage, and Clark's pissed. And rather than being Clark and going, oh boy, guys, I don't know about that. And hemming and hawing and being a coward, he gets all up in their faces and he says, you better let her go or the Daily Planet is going to publish a story on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, whoa, okay.
He threatens maybe to we should the let media her go. On him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. 1941, yeah. Man, you can't be having any bad press on the military or the local police. That's not going to work.
Yeah. And so they let her go, and she comes out of her room that they have her hold waiting in, and she's pissed too. And she tells them that it's a good thing you released me before I lost my temper. And they let her know that, hey, Clark's the reason you're out. He stood up for you. And she doesn't seem to care. She thought he'd be asleep.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't go, oh, Clark, you're my hero or anything like that. Or, whoa, Clark, you grew some balls. You know, nothing like that. She's just like, I thought you were going to be asleep. And then he can sense. He uses his X-ray vision. He sees that there's three identically dressed guys in brown pants and white shirts underground in a tunnel beneath them with a bunch of TNT or dynamite or whatever, and they're getting ready to blow it up. And he can hear them saying that once they blow it up, all the munitions above them will explode as well. And so he needs to try to come up with an excuse to stay behind and check them out. And he tells the others that his feet hurt. So he wants to just kind of hang out there for a little while because his feet hurt.
Yep.
But he changes into Superman, tunnels beneath, and boy, those guys just go at him, don't they?
Yep.
They try knives shooting him. They try sticking him with knives. And here was another confusing part, because we got this panel where they start stabbing him, and Clark's and Superman's like, don't! And he looks like he's being stabbed, like he's getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're all like, all of our blades are broken. Why did you pretend that you were injured? And he goes, I just wanted your leader to think he was getting away, because there are actually five of them. Yeah. One of them took off down the tunnel.
Every time you turn around, there's more.
Right. Yeah, because the first time we see them through his X-ray vision, there were just three.
Three. Okay.
And then suddenly there's five. We don't see all five of them together, but we now see four of them together, but we're told that one of them, their leader, has run away.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, so. Boy, they reach back for a couple years and they do that classic Superman thing. He takes all four of them, two under each arm, and just runs down the tunnel with the four of them. Just, it's funny because just yesterday I have been trying to, update all the old episodes with a new theme song and whatnot. And I had one that just didn't sound good. And I ended up going back to the YouTube audio, which sounded much better. And so I sat down and I listened to the whole episode to take out anything that, you know, basically I re-edited it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the episode, I think it was episode 7, Superman in the Slums. He's dealing with these four teenage juvenile delinquents. And at one point he has all four of them under both of his arms. And right. we commented about that quite a bit in the episode. And then suddenly I read this last night. So same day. And I'm like, oh my God, he's doing it again. I don't think he's done this since that issue.
Right. Yeah.
And the same day I run into both instances.
Yep. So now, so he gets he's got the four guys here, and He leaves them. This is kind of weird here. The sequence. He's running through the tunnel with them because he's taking them captive. Next panel, he has gotten to where the leader went from the underground tunnel above ground, and Superman is just poking his head up through the ground. No sign of the four guys, and he sees the leader getting away in an airplane. Conveniently, there was an airplane nearby, and then a panel of the airplane, and then the next panel, Superman in the air with the four guys. Now, you can figure that since the leader is getting away in an airplane, Superman is going to want to follow him, tag along somehow. So he's got to do something with the four guys. He can't just carry him around. But then I'm like, well, why did you take him to begin with if he didn't? Yeah. So he decides that what he's going to do is he's going to maroon them on top of a power pole somewhere.
Yeah,
along
he
the
can't
way.
Just let him go. He can't just let him run free.
No. So he leaves them there, basically on top of the power pole, and they're all clinging to different aspects of this big power pole. Who knows? What is it? It's probably 15, 20 feet off the air.
Oh, yeah.
Is what they are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could drop, and if you're lucky, not really get hurt and manage to get away. But yeah, and then Superman takes off in the air. Looks like he's running, but I guess he has leapt, and he grabs onto the plane, much like he did with the car, only without the explanation.
Yeah.
He landed on the car without a sound so he could keep up with what Lois was doing. Here he grabs the back of the plane and allows the plane to pull him along without altering the flight or changing the weight of the plane or anything like that to follow the plane.
His supreme muscles allow him to hang on a plane without affecting the weight in any way.
Yeah, I guess. And it shows him grabbing onto the tail. And I believe there is a control flap on the back of the tail.
Yeah.
Is that the aileron? Or I mean, you see the cross portion of the tail. I know that has flaps, but I thought that the tail itself at the end of it has a flap too. And that's what he's holding. So it's like, well, then the plane wouldn't be able to turn because you're holding. Yeah. So,
you know, these days, had they made this story in the last 20, even 30, 40 years, there would have been a bit, we'll pretend that Superman suddenly can't fly. There would have been a bit where when he grabbed onto the back of the plane, you would have seen the guy in the cockpit go, whoa, something is like something just added 100 pounds to the plane. And then he'd look out the window and go, well, I don't see anything, and then just keeps flying.
Yeah.
But yeah, they let our imaginations do that in this. And the thing with Superman right now, like you said, why did he grab these guys if he wasn't going to take them along? He obviously isn't thinking ahead. He's making it all up as he goes along. This is the Superman that just makes it all up as he goes along. And it makes me think of Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's a scene in Raiders where I think Indiana Jones and Sala see the Germans taking the ark away from the burial site. And I think Sala tells Indiana that they're going to put it on a train, but then they see them taking it in a convoy of cars.
Mm-hmm.
And Indy tells Sala, all right, go into town and hire us a ship and I'll meet you there. I'm going to go get the ark. And Sala says, how? And Indy says, I don't know. I'm making this up as I go along. And that's Superman. In this issue, he's just like, he's going with the flow. He's trying to do what he can. And, obviously he thought, well, I got to take these guys with me because they're going to have to go to jail. But, oh, wait, no, I got to get this guy too. So I'll hang these guys from an electrical pole. And I don't know, maybe I'll come back for him. I don't know, but I got to grab this plane right now and let it take me where it's going. And we'll see what happens from there.
And just so that you know, by the end of the story, he never goes back to get those guys. So we really
not
don't
that
know.
We know of.
We don't know what happens to him.
Yeah. And when we get to that part in the story where he goes back to Lois, I'll talk about it when we get there. But so much happens between the time that he says, my feet hurt, I'm going to sit here for a moment, to when he gets back to that point that I forgot. That he literally went straight from there. All this shit happens, and then he has to go back before they knew he was gone. That's how rapid fire things are happening right now. And so much is happening that I was really confused. That why is he Why is he pretending? Why did he go back? What? Oh, that's right. He's supposed to have just been sitting there with his barking dogs this whole time.
Yep.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages. And now back to the Superman Super Show.
Okay, so, yeah, the plane lands, he jumps in a car, and then this dude who, I guess, is this Derwing? Yeah, I guess this is going to be
yes.
Derwing.
Yeah, this is Derwing.
Where did they give that name?
Just now.
Just now?
Yeah. I think this is the first time we hear his name. As soon as he walks in, the guy says, "Thought you'd never get here, Derwing. You're late."
Oh, there it is. Okay. Yeah, I completely missed that they gave him a name. But yeah, he jumps out of the plane into a car and drives to the Senate office building, the narrator tells us here. And as Superman gets on scene, he lets us know that he's entering Senator Galsworthy's office. This ought to prove interesting. And then we have this very textual scene.
Very weird.
With Derwing and at least three other guys. Looks like maybe they stay pretty consistent with three other guys.
Yeah, but they make it sound like it's a room full of people at one point. Because Derwing gives a whole speech about how he's chairman of the committee against militarism. And
right.
Senator Galsworthy is helping me and letting me use the space. And this is what we're doing. And we're not going to aid any warring democracies. And we're trying to get the United States to stop being a bunch of warmongers and blah, blah, blah. But then at one point he mentions, says, after most of the men depart and only a few remain. So mm-hmm. at that point, it's okay. Like, We see four max people in that right. first panel, and one right. of them is Derwing. So when most of the men leave and we're left with just a few of them, we're still seeing four, Derwing and three other guys.
Right. Yeah. Which is what we started with. And it's yeah. like, well, what? Yeah.
And two of those guys, I want to refer to them as, who are the two brothers involved before the whole Facebook thing? That they say that what's his name? Zuckerberg stole the idea for Facebook from.
I'm not sure.
The Winklevoss brothers. That's what these two guys make me think of, because they're always right next to each other, even though it's only just a few panels. And they're just, I mean, they're right next to each other. They might as well be hugging. They could be Siamese twins. They're just pressed together the entire time. And they're very funny. They're very funny because before all the saps, the gullible saps leave, as they refer to them. You know, the guy's giving his speech and he's talking about how that the army's supplies stored here in Metropolis are about to be exploded just so that the grafters can sell new materials at the taxpayers' expense. And one of the Winklevoss brothers go, "It's outrageous." And the other one says, "We'll protest." And then the guy says, "We'll leave Derwing. We'll leave the office and then we'll begin to do this stuff." And they go, "Bravo, you can lead us. We can't fail." They're just very, very, they are some ass-kissing dudes is what they are. They even refer to him before that second row of panels. I think they refer to him, that guy, as their leader at some point. The leader wants us to do this. It's mm-hmm. like they just so quickly turn into these sniveling yes men. "Yes, master, we will do this for you. You are the leader. Bravo. You're the best." You know, it's just they crack me up.
It is. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I got to point out one more panel, because this is where it did it for me. Because like you said, there is a lot of text on this page. There's a lot of talking. But after most of the group leaves, Derwing admits to those left behind, because the two, as I keep calling them, the Winklevoss brothers, they basically tell Derwing, "All right, now that all the saps, the gullible saps have left, tell us what you're really here for, because we want to know what we're going to get out of all this. We don't care about any of that military peace crap, pacifist stuff. We want to make money, and we want to know how you're going to do that." And just by telling him that, Derwing's like, "Hey, you're my kind of people. I'm going to tell you all the truth now, because I can see that you're just like me." And so that's when he tells him that he works for a foreign nation that wants to basically, they want to rule the world, basically. That's what this foreign nation wants. And they know they can't do that while America stands in the way. And once they accomplish their goals over here, then his nation will take over. And when that happens, these guys will stand to profit. And so the two Winklevoss brothers are like, splendid! We'll all be big shots when that day arrives. There, one guy's even holding his hand up like, yay! Yeah. It's so funny. And that's when Superman rushes into the room so fast to turn on the dictaphone, which would have been an old-time tape recorder.
Mm-hmm.
He manages to rush into the room, switch it on, and rush out so fast that nobody sees him. They think a hurricane has come through, but it's like a hurricane was just in here. Nah, must have been nothing. I mean, I would have been freaking out. What the flip was that?
No doubt. You know? A big rush of air that. I mean,
maybe we should go into another room because that was freaky.
Something weird is going on here.
Yeah, but there, instead, that strong wind, almost like a hurricane. What could have caused it? Never mind. It's gone. Okay.
And rather than using Nazis in this story, they reference totalitarian governments, which at this time Germany is. And actually, if you look up history, most of what is going to be called the Axis in World War II are all under totalitarian rule. Yeah. Spain, Italy, the USSR, Japan, Romania, you know, so it doesn't, you know, so they're not saying Nazis, but I believe by saying totalitarian government, they're implying so that they don't have to say Nazi since they've already used Nazis in previous stories. But I'm like, Nazis are as good as any bad guy right now. So just go ahead and use Nazi.
Without looking it up, I'm fairly certain, because I think we talked about this a year ago around the end of the 40s. I believe that World War II may have started by this point. America's just not in it at this point. And there's a lot of this isn't our fight.
Right,
we need to stay out of it sentimentality going on in America right now. So it's very possible that, of course they mean the Nazis. We know that. But maybe they can't say it because they don't want to, maybe they don't want to come across as too political. They don't want that side of America going, oh, you're just trying to get us into the war, you know.
I just think it's funny that at this time also it could be, although the characterizations aren't correct, but they could be referring to Japan also, which a little bit later, by the end of this year, we will, you know, be a little bit more interested in what Japan is doing in the world. Yeah. So,
or even Italy. I mean, Mussolini, there was, I listened to a podcast, I can't remember the name of it now, but after World War II, there was a large group of American businessmen, millionaire type businessmen, who tried to, it never got to the point where you would say it was an attempted coup, but they had this whole plan put together to take over the government because they really liked what Mussolini was doing. They liked this whole fascist thing that was going on with Mussolini. They thought that America should be run that way. And it was a really interesting podcast, but, just based on, I don't know. Yeah, these guys are could be Germans or Italians at this point. But
yeah, they could be any of those. But I feel pretty sure that they're probably supposed to be German.
Oh, yeah. I think anybody from that time forward, when you look back, you know, of course, you know, the Japanese were obviously involved. Otherwise, I mean, they're the reason we got into the war.
Right.
And the Italians were involved. You know, that was all part of the Axis powers. But the Nazis stand above them all. They always have.
Right.
So tell us about this funny moment when the senator arrives.
Okay. So the senator is coming to his office, but he runs into Superman, who is eavesdropping on our ne'er-do-wells here from inside. So he's not having to hang on a sill or anything like that. He is, which, where was that? That's in the, okay. So. The senator arrives and he sees Superman. Superman is just outside his office door, and we'll say that the senator is coming down the hallway towards his office. He sees Superman, wraps him up from behind because he sees that Superman is eavesdropping. He knows that something is going on in his office, grabs him, puts him almost in like a headlock, says, "What are you up to?" And Superman says, "Shh," whirls him around and puts his hand over his mouth, says, "Shh, listen." And so then you have a narration panel. And the next panel, you see that Superman is behind him, holding him, and he's pushed him up towards the doorway so that he can get a good listen on what's going on the other side of the door. And that's where the senator gets clued into the fact that these men are using his office, which he's aware of, but they're using his office to do something that he had no knowledge of. It's not what he was told or what he thought his office was going to be used for.
Yeah, he thought they were just a pacifist group. And this is where he learns that they were phony pacifists.
Which this group, it's bad enough that this pacifist group is trying to blow up a munitions and supply depot. They have fired on a freighter and on American land in a submarine. And so it's like, well, I guess the senator, of course, doesn't know that these two incidences are connected. No. But in hiding the true goal and pretending to be just an anti-war group, to have started out with all of these major, major plans as far as blowing stuff up and actually shooting on American soil and things like that, it's like, well, it's going to be interesting that you're going to try to maintain your cover when you've already done these far more unfortunate thing, you know, worse things than what just a normal pacifist group. Well, so you would think. I mean, later on in history, pacifist groups in this country go pretty extreme at times.
Yeah, but for a pacifist group, they're pretty violent.
If that's your cover,
you do run across people like that a lot. It's like, if I have to kill 500,000 people to allow peace to break out in our world, that's what I'll do.
Yeah. And yeah, automatically it's like, well, then what separates you from them again?
Nothing.
Explain
nothing
that
at all.
To me. Yeah.
Nothing.
I mean, if you're, your ends might be different, but if your means to those ends are the same, you're the same.
Each side thinks they're doing the right thing.
Oh, absolutely.
They are. Yeah. Road to hell is paved with good intentions.
You know? But yeah, it's just funny. It's like, yeah, once you cross a line, it's like you're the same thing. You're just, you're calling it different. That's all.
But I love this scene simply because of the senator who, he's coming back to his office. He's been out to lunch or whatever, and he sees a guy in a crazy suit eavesdropping outside of his office. And, you know, I think nowadays most people would be like, excuse me, what are you doing? But he just sneaks up behind him and grabs him in a headlock. What are you up to, buddy? And tries to wrestle him to the ground. There's just no, he's, you know, there's no subtlety to that at all. He's like, he had a big steroid burger or something for lunch, because
maybe
he doesn't even try to solve the issue with words. He goes immediately to grappling with Superman in the hallway.
Yep.
Makes you wonder if this has happened to him before.
Well, he was prepared, it seems. He didn't hesitate or anything. He didn't try to talk to him or anything. He just sees him eavesdropping and he gets all physical.
Yeah. And then when you turn the page, once he learns what's going on in there, he rushes into the room and punches Derwing right in the face. He obviously doesn't hit him very hard because Derwing just goes, ow, grab him, you know. But
still, he rushes in. He doesn't take time to see, you know, perhaps you're going to be outnumbered or anything.
Yeah.
He just rushes in. And how does he know which one to punch? I guess because this is the dude that set up the meeting.
Yeah,
because
I think he knows Derwing because...
So,
he just happens to burst in at the same time that Derwin's saying, he busts in. Derwing says, it's our good friend, Senator. Oh, that doesn't make any sense. They obviously typed that wrong.
It's our
good friend, Senator Derwing. It's like, no, you're Derwing.
That's a typo. Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
It's like, good friend, eh? So there's the second A in our in our issue. And then, you traitor, pow, right in the kisser.
Yep. Runs up to him.
That's when the leader thing comes in. He's attacking the leader.
Yeah.
Which, wow, you went like zero to cult in 60 seconds, you know?
Yep. A lot more going on off panel than apparently we have been exposed to.
But all three of them, because now there's just three of them. I don't know where the fourth guy went.
Who knows?
But they jump on. Well, no, these must be three other, because Durwing is not in this panel, I guess, when they're tackling the senator, because Durwing is escaping out the window.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Superman rushes in and just starts throwing people in all directions.
Well, no, I think it's Durwing that gets the senator on the legs.
Yeah, maybe.
Because he's got that shirt on. And then while Superman comes in and starts throwing people around, that's when Durwing takes flight and starts trying to get away.
But he goes out the window and he tries to climb down the drain pipe, which gives way, and he falls. Superman jumps out the window, catches him, does that thing where he just bounces off the ground so nobody's hurt, and jumps back up to the window and tosses the guy in the window. The guy is really upset. He doesn't seem to have wanted to kill himself. That doesn't seem to be his goal when he goes out the window. But once he starts plummeting to Earth, I guess he's like, well, I should probably die so none of this gets out. Because then when Superman grabs him, the guy's like, no, let me die. Let me die. And
right.
But Superman tosses him back in the window. And then that's when he goes back to the depot. This is where I get confused, because he just tosses him in the window and he goes, I have to get back to the depot before they find out that I'm gone. And to me, hours and hours and hours have gone by since he left the depot, but I guess not. He gets back just in time as Lois and the sergeant show up and ask him how his feet are. He's fine, thank you. Let's go. All I'm interested in right now is an easy chair.
Yeah. So, you know, you figure they're checking out this building. So it was what, 15, 20 minutes? And then they came back to where Clark was.
So, yeah, he did a lot of shit in 15 minutes.
Yep. Went across country, across the city to wherever this other building, came back, followed the plane. Got the guys underground at the depot, which this is where they're at here, is where this supply depot is.
Yeah.
And it's quite a bit of stuff for, like I say, probably 15, 20 minutes at most.
Yeah. But no, it had to have been at least 3 hours, at least. And then we get the classic final panel. Lois and Clark. Lois is reading the newspaper. I can't understand how you dug up the material for this scoop. And the last words, there are many things you don't understand, my dear. Damn, Clark. Clark gets in like he sticks his knife in her. He might as well just said, that's because you're stupid.
Twist, you're a girl.
You're stupid, Lois. You're a girl. You don't know stuff. You're stupid. Yep. Can I kiss you?
No, not yet. He will.
So, I really enjoyed this one. This one was a lot of fun. So chaotic, very confusing at times. So much happens. I just love these stories that within 13 pages, it's like six issues worth of stuff happens within 13 pages.
You know, this story would be multiple issues nowadays. Yeah. You know, there's no way that they would condense it this much.
Yeah. And if, you know, I think if I was buying a comic book nowadays, a new comic book in which all this happened, even in a 22-page stories, I think I would just be exhausted by the end of it. I don't know that I would go, well, that was worth my money, because there was a lot of stuff that happened. I think I'd be wondering why they tried to cram so much into it.
Yes, absolutely.
But yet, you knowing that this is a golden age story, and that's just the way it was, as exhausting as it is, it's like, these are the best ones. These are the best stories when they put so much in there that couldn't possibly happen in the 15 to 20 minutes that realistically Clark was gone.
Yep.
But yeah.
And this is just the first story. There are three more in this book that we're, if we're sitting here holding this thing reading, we're only 25% of the way through it.
And let me go to the cover page here. They were, doesn't have a price on it. I'm sure it does on Mike's Amazing World, but they were like, what, a dime?
I think, 10-15 cents. Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, granted, a dime back then is different than a dime now, but still, the way I understand prices of comic books now based on prices of comic books back then and normal inflation, a dime back then would be like $1.50 now. You know, it's the comics are way more expensive than they should be based on normal inflation.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, back then you give them a dime and you get a 4 stories that would fill an entire trade paperback worth of things that are happening nowadays. That's a good deal. I can understand why people loved comics so much back then, why they were so popular.
It's also one of the reasons that the anthology concept for some people is as popular as it is because for whatever the price may be, you typically feel that you have gotten more for your money.
Oh, yeah.
Than just what the standard would be.
Because nowadays, if they were doing this nowadays, if they were doing anthology comics like this, you get a comic with 4 13-page stories in it. You're not getting 4 standalone stories.
Right.
You're getting part one of like 16 other installments. So it's completely different. If anthology comics nowadays were like this, I'd totally be picking up anthology comics, knowing that I'm going into something that is going to be done in 13 pages. It's going to be ridiculous. The quickness in which they wrap up the story and stuff. You know, if you know you're going into it, this is what you're expecting. They can be really, really quite enjoyable.
This one was fun. It was full, but it was fun. Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say about this story?
You folks that don't have it, go out and get it and read it. It was cool.
Heck yeah. This is so far, and since Ed and I have read the second story as well, because that's what we're gonna hear in a bit. We're gonna start recording the episode talking about the second story. Just based on those two stories, this issue was worth the price of admission.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, let's wrap this show up. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show today. I hope you had as much fun as I had and as much fun as Ed had. You can reach out to us if you want to. You can leave your comments there on the YouTube. You can send us an email, supermansupershow@gmail.com. All that stuff's going to be in the show notes, where you can find Ed online, where you can find me online. It's all in the show notes. So I'm not going to spend any more time talking about it. So until next week, folks, I'm Steven, that's Ed, and this was the Superman Super Show. Bye.
Ciao.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to thesupermansupershow@gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out stevenorelse.com or just use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Superman's bad. I mean, he was bad.
Y'all ain't understanding me though. All the heights I'm planning to go. I thought I told you, boy, I'm a soldier boy. I'm Superman in that flow. With a cape on, every line I drop napalm. Every song I put my name on. Johnny Storm, I go flame on. A new challenger approaches, so game on. Put your quarters up. Matter of fact, hold your controllers up. To all the players in the house, don't give up. Let me show y'all what's up. War rocks the name, and I'm still the same. Silver Age, and a damn thing changed. Murder world when you're in the arcade. Danger Room is the place where I train. Murk with the mouth, so it hurts to shout. When I break that jaw, you can call me Kane. Perfectly able, time slide in the present like cable. With the hope for the future, quote the producer. Every single session it's
cash.
Every single record you're
cash.
It's doing like the Hulk do
smash.
I'm Clark Kent with them glasses on. Jean Grey school, gifted students, get your classes on. I'm still the strongest in this here rap game. And we ain't even from the same place, your Padawan.
What? The way I rock that mic, what I thought I was from Krypton. Krypton, Krypton. The way I rock that mic, what I thought I was from Krypton. Krypton, Krypton.
some shh. Pulled up in the BLACKBIRD. They see me, but they still can't see. So fancy with the raps on a brand of sheen. Got me spin so candidly.
Go back,
way back, like LBB. Get spitting on my rack, carries fantasy. Where my rack queens at? Holla back. For the cats with the VIP badges. For the ladies with the cosplay fashion. The collectors with the craziest stashes. The war rock soundtrack is probably what you've been searching for. You've been hurting for. Ain't never seen another rapper in a store. And I'm in your top 10.
Alan Moore.
Speak like Duke does. Easy on the record, I'm ruthless. Holla for variant dot cast and still the big two can't fool us. But what's that? You say you don't like rap, but you never rap along to Snoop, bruh. You hate Outkast, hate Bon Jovi. If you hating on that,
that ain't cool, cousin.
Still soaring, the Mike Jordan of recording. Okay, maybe the nerd version, but don't let that little perversion keep you from hearing dope shit
that I'm producing. Adam Warrock, I'm an alien, Houston.
The way I rock that mic, would've thought I was from Krypton.